This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live from AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt and Patrick here today, guest free for the entire 2 hours. So, hello. I have no idea. Patrick, how are you completely out of your NCAA bracket already?
Not yet. Duquesne did upset BYU. That was kind of not the most shocking thing that ever happened, that it was an 11 over a 6.
Someone picked that game. Thank you very much. I've told you the story about why I'm never going to win this tournament again. I think it was the first year I filled out a bracket. It probably was the first year I filled out a bracket. I had just started working at WGEZ, or Woodgies, in Beloit, Wisconsin. And, yeah, delightful town. Oh, the majesty, the splendor. I worked in Beloit, and I met my wife down there, and she kind of brought me into the fold with her group of friends, and they did a NCAA tournament bracket that you could pick the games for that year. So this is 1994. The total amount of games I missed that year, four games I missed the entire tournament. Four. I have not even gotten close because, you know, I'm like everyone else. It's like, this one's got a bunny for a mascot. I'm taking the bunny team. My daughter picked it last year because she didn't like UConn. She thought it was UConn Cornelius from the little Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer cartoon. So she went with UConn, and she won. There you go. There's your insight. I have nothing to add because, you know, yeah. Yeah. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. But since it is such a sports-heavy, because, I mean, no one's paying attention to anything. I mean, I think these games started at what? 10:30 this morning, 11 o'clock this morning?
I think tip off with 11:15 Central Time for Michigan State, Mississippi State.
They're going to be playing until, I think they have tip-offs at like 11 tonight, don't they? Or is it 9? Is it 9?
I think the last tip-off will be about 9:15 Central.
Yeah, something like that. Just, you know, it is the best sports tournament we do. It is hands down. The NCAA March Madness bracket is the best tournament because you get the right amount of teams in there. It's one and done. It's not best of sevens. It is, you know, win or go home, and, you know, everyone's invited. So party in the pool. So, but since we are talking sports, I've got to talk about a story that is shaking the sports world. And it has to do with gambling and the baseball's MLB's biggest superstar, Ohtani, Shohei Ohtani, over at the LA Dodgers. They're playing games. These games count that they're playing in Korea right now?
Yep.
With those, the Padres and the Dodgers?
Yep, those two games were regular season games.
Who doesn't love March baseball? Yeah. Ohtani's longtime interpreter and friend, Ippei Mizuhara was fired by the Dodgers after being reported to have stolen millions of dollars from the two-way phenomenon to cover his gambling debts. Not Ohtani's gambling debts, Mizuhara's gambling debts. The story stunned the baseball world, but it's not as cut and dry as that. ESPN laid out it was clearly a bizarre situation behind the scenes, all centered around the claim that Ohtani had agreed to initially cover Mizuhara's debts. An Ohtani spokesman reportedly claimed to be the case to ESPN, only to reverse course one day later. They'd actually done, I guess, an interview with Mizuhara, and he had basically said, yes, this was my gambling problem, and Ohtani was playing the debts. Someone must have realized, oh, yeah, this is a big no-no. You can't be, because there is, in California, gambling is still illegal. You cannot bet on sports games. There's an illegal bookie in the Los Angeles area that's been investigated, and when they started doing investigation, they were kind of stunned to find Ohtani's name on payments and stuff like this. And they're like, okay, what's going on here? That's when supposedly, and I say supposedly because this is a possibility, you can't say for sure what's really going on here. His interpreter said he's got the gambling problem and that Ohtani was helping to cover his gambling expenses. That basically, Major League Baseball players are allowed to gamble on sports that are not baseball, but not through illegal means. ESPN cited sources in the gaming operation that claimed Boyer dealt directly with guy that was the bookie was directly with Mizuhara for bets on soccer and other non baseball sports. In the interest of clarity, the story is they go through the story of these two. Mizuhara had allegedly been in 2021. He'd been allegedly placing bets on DraftKings. Meets Matthew Boyer, a bookmaker, at a poker game in San Diego. He later claimed to have believed it was legal to place bets with Boyer, which he supposedly did, a lot. Bank records show Ohtani's name on two $500,000 wire transfers sent to Associated Bowers. Boyers, B-O-W-Y-E-R-S. The description section of the transaction read, loan. One ESPN source claims that Boyer allowed people to believe Ohtani was a client to help his business. So the bookie, who I guess we can say is not exactly probably to be believed, was telling people Ohtani is the guy I'm dealing with. Mizuhara later claims the deal was done. This was done after Ohtani agreed to cover $4.5 million of his gambling debts. Ohtani allegedly wasn't happy, but said he would help to make sure Mizuhara wouldn't do it again. Ohtani was also said to have logged onto his own computer and sent the wires under Muzahara's supervision. Asked why Ohtani didn't simply give him the money instead of paying Boyer Associate directly, Mizuhara said Ohtani didn't trust him with money. He didn't want me to gamble it away, Mizuhara said. Mizuhara told Ohtani that he'd pay him back. In October of last year, Boyer's house was raided. Search warrants, inventory showing agencies, cash, casino chips, banking documents, and plenty of other things. Ohtani basically gets a contract 2 months later with the L.A. Dodgers. 10 years, $700 million deal with the Dodgers that defers $680 million to be paid after the life of the contract. Those same federal authorities learned that Ohtani's name is on wire payments to the illegal bookie. ESPN gets wind of the story on March 19th. That's on Tuesday of this week. Contacts Ohtani's camp while the star is in South Korea. Crucially, a spokesperson tells ESPN that Ohtani transferred the funds to cover Mizuhara's gambling debt, then makes Mizuhara available for a 90-minute interview in which he lays out the supposed story. Obviously, Ohtani wasn't happy about it and said he would help me to get out of it, and I would never do this again, Mizuhara said. He decided to play it off for me. I want everyone to know Ohtani had zero involvement in betting. I want people to know I did not know this was illegal, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Ohtani helps lead the Dodgers to a season-opening 5-2 win over the San Diego Padres in Korea. An ESPN reporter asked the Ohtani camp about Muzahara's allegations. Ohtani was present and helped move the funds. It was going to be paid back. Ohtani spokesperson contacts Ohtani's attorneys, then disavows Mizuhara's account. Ohtani's attorneys at Burke Brettler LLP released a statement. In the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discovered that Ohtani has been with the victim of a massive theft and they're turning the matter over to the authorities. Mizuhara agrees with another interview with ESPN but says he was told he could not comment when asked
if he was been accused of theft, he declines to say who told him that. Mizuhara then recants his story, claiming that Ohtani had no knowledge of his gambling activities or debts. The story then broke by the LA Times, which received this statement, and Mizuhara then is fired. That all happened on the 20th. Following the Dodgers' 15-11 loss to the Padres, Ohtani is guarded at his locker by team PR officials, leaves the locker room without speaking to reporters. The entire sequence of events leaves plenty of questions. So, at best, and Patrick, you know sports better than I do. At best, we can say Ohtani was a bonehead who basically didn't realize his friend was getting him into trouble. That's the best case scenario, correct?
Yep, and that's what I told you when you got here, that either Ohtani or the people managing his money are completely incompetent with said money.
Hey, you need your taxes accounting done. Talk to Patrick. He's on it there. But he's right. He's 100% right. By the way, and that's the best case scenario. I don't think you're wildly out of speculating if, considering how this all went down, that the person with the gambling problem is Ohtani. And that basically to get away from this story, they threw the interpreter under the bus, who basically went out there to, hey, I'm the guilty party. He was just backing me up. And then all of a sudden they realized, oh, this is a bad thing. He shouldn't have been sending wire transfers to a bookie anyway. Oh, it was all stolen money, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I am of the mindset he probably was gambling himself. And this has all just been a setup to basically cover him. And the fact that the team PR people are letting no one near him at this point, and that the lawyers all involved, that if this was truly as innocent as an innocent but stupid as the interpreter was in saying, it would be the case. This comes after, as this story breaks, there has been other people who have started saying that coaches and stuff who are getting confronted now by people gambling. Did you see that story at all, Patrick?
I have not seen this. No,
one of the coaches, I think it was in the NBA, said he was confronted after a game because a guy lost money on the game. And he's like, okay, you guys, we got to clean this up. And as well, you've got people who are approaching athletes now. Back when I was a kid, when the only thing you saw about gambling on a sports broadcast was on the preview of a game, they'd say, hey, the Bears are going to beat the Vikings by three. That's the favorite. What's your thought on the game? That's all you'd hear about, you know? Now, all sports broadcasting is, you know, the over-under, how many points, how many yards will they throw for, how many baskets, how many threes, all these things. Because the gambling industry is out of control. It is my guess that at least 5% of all athletes are gambling on actively gambling. And it's my guess at least 1% of all athletes are gambling on their own teams. And this is Pete Rose times a million. And if you get to the point where people are questioning whether or not the product on the field is even legitimate, or if it's just a WWE storyline, you've already lost. And I got to tell you what, this is going to get worse before it gets a lot better. Trust me, this is going to get a lot worse. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I feel so out of place. There's a place in my heart when it all comes crashing down. Anytime I hear your name, I'm public. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205. Yeah, no, I mean, this is why Pete Rose was thrown out of baseball. I mean, he was managing his games, and he was betting on his own games. And if you – all right, a quick little thing. I didn't want to spend much more time on this, but if I may. You go to Vegas, and have you ever gone out there and you've seen those massive casinos? All those stuff, all the bells and whistles, all the shiny, you know, baubles and all that stuff that they have all over that place? They didn't build those because there were so many winners. You get these sports apps today. If you are a parent, your kids are being bombarded with gamble, gamble, gamble all the time. Seriously, they are. And they promise, $1,000 in free bets. Now, I want to make sure you understand, these companies are making tons of money. So if you're getting fronted $1,000 and they're still making money, it tells you everything right there. Gambling is, in my mind, I've never been a big fan of it. I mean, hey, I do like a tournament bracket here, but it doesn't cost me anything to do that. I do a fantasy football thing, but that's there's nothing there. It's this, you have to, and they have gotten very, very convincing with the ads that they get the biggest stars and the biggest celebrities talking about, if you're sitting out tonight, every night you need to be wagering the mortgage of your house on this game. Victory favors the bold. Come on, guys. And there have been people, the Super Bowl we just had, there have been people who lost everything. They had money and they said, I got a guaranteed bet, and they thought they were going to win and they didn't win and they lost everything. Far more people lost than won. That's how the system works. So you need to keep that in perspective. The system is already tilted against you. So if 5% of all athletes are all gambling, how many of them suck at it and are in tremendous amount of debt who keep getting convinced, well, maybe you should put some money on a game tonight and maybe you'll make some of your money back? And eventually it gets to a point where the bookie looks at you and says, here's the deal. I'll forgive all your debts, but here's what's going to happen. There are going to be 5 games in the upcoming season that when you're playing, you're going to drop that ball. You're going to strike out instead of get a hit. There are going to be times where you are going to miss that three-pointer. You're going to miss that slap shot. Or if you're a goalie, you're going to let that goal in. And we'll tell you what games, and we'll tell you how much goals or yards or points that you need to give up, and that's how it happens. And if you are a fool if you don't think that is already going on right now in this country. Legal or not, that stuff is going on. Pete Rose was gambling on his own team, the Cincinnati Reds. He was managing the teams. And it's if you go back and you read about it, he was doing such perplexing shifts, and when guys were looking good pitching, he'd yank them, and then he put guys in that weren't really productive. It was clear that he was throwing games for gamblers. If you get to the point where people cannot trust that the outcome of a game isn't already predetermined, you don't have the sports anymore. You have professional wrestling. And nothing against professional wrestling. Those guys are big, strong, fast, incredibly athletic. But they're a soap opera in tights. It's a script. It's a script. And this is why back in 1918 or 1919, the Black Sox scandal, they basically cracked down on baseball overall, because they realized something, that someone can take drugs. Someone can drug themselves out of their mind. And it's not ideal and it's not good and you don't want that. But really, that doesn't help the team win or lose per se. It just mainly hurts the player. If the game itself is in question, then you've lost every bit of credibility. And to give, I'll look particularly at Major League Baseball. I'll look at you clowns and say, you guys opened the door for this. You caught the Houston Astros red-handed cheating at the World Series. They won their World Series cheating. They cheated. You caught them red-handed doing it. And you didn't strip them of the title. You didn't strip them of this. You basically gave them the stern finger wag of, oh boy, but enjoy your victory parade and celebration. In 20 years, they'll still celebrate that World Series title. In 30 years, they'll still celebrate that World Series title. You should have stripped them from that and gotten rid of it, because you caught them red-handed cheating. They were stealing signals. Same with the Boston Red Sox. You caught them red-handed cheating. And you didn't do what you needed to do. You basically made the point that some cheating is okay. And so you can't criticize anyone because you yourselves have already forfeited the ability to say there's integrity within your sport. This is going to, trust me, this is the beginning. This is the beginning. I guarantee you we are on the precipice of hearing of athlete after athlete after athlete. Oh, they were caught gambling. They were caught gambling. They were caught gambling. And the problem is going to be is this. You think that ESPN and Fox Sports Network and NBC Sports, you think any of these sports networks, considering how much money they make from the gambling apps and Vegas, you think for 1 second they're going to take the side of the leagues and the athletes? Or are they going to take the side of the gamblers? Of course they're going to take the side of the gamblers. They are printing freaking money. And this, and what this boils down to is this, is that we are teaching a society, we are teaching particularly, like I said, late millennials, Generation Z, the amount of money that is spent directly marketing to those people, that group of young people who have money, or in many of the cases they don't have money, to get them into what's the big deal, gambling is gambling. Kind of to treat it like drinking. It's like, hey, you know, it's been a busy Tuesday, you're tired, hey, let's go have a beer. It's a busy Tuesday, you know what, why don't you, you know, lay down, you know, $20 on the T-Wolves game. That's what they want you to do. They want this to normalize this as much as possible. Not because you got a fair chance. No, because they want you to get into debt and get desperate and say to yourself, yeah, I was saving my $400 to go on a vacation, but instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this money and I'm going to go and I'm going to go and put it all on this game. And boom, I lost it all. And now all of a sudden you can't go on the vacations. You might get a little more desperate. And then all of a sudden it becomes the rent money. Then it becomes other money that you shouldn't really be spending. And then you're in debt, and then all of a sudden you're bankrupt and you're losing everything. But you know what? The gambling apps, they're getting paid at your expense. Like I said, this is a mess. We'll take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So in case you have missed it, the Republicans have brought forth a budget, which is a mess. So the thing which is funny is when this was initially reported, it was like the House Republicans bringing forth the budget to try to get the government to stay open. And I was waiting for the other shoe to drop because they didn't really. Funny, when those initial stories came out, it's like people haven't seen the budget yet. But it's like, oh, OK. Well, we now know what's in this budget bill, which reminder, I want to remind everyone out there that you know how Republicans when they are not in power, they get upset and they say, why are we putting policy into budget bills? You shouldn't be doing that. Well, get ready to take a trip on the USS policy bill. Holy God. A large majority of the House Republicans released a budget proposal on Wednesday endorsing legislation that would threaten to make in vitro fertilization illegal nationwide. That's right. Women, they're sticking their nose in your business. The move is stunning turnabout after most of the party spends week voicing support for for in vitro fertilization following the controversial Alabama Supreme Court ruling that led providers in the state to halt the procedure. The Republican Study Committee, an influential group that comprises nearly 80% of the House Republicans, released its budget for fiscal year 2025 and backed the Life at Conception Act. The legislation would grant full legal rights to embryos in the moment of fertilization, the same logic employed by the Alabama justices who effectively outlawed IVF in the state. The Senate version of the bill had to carve out to protect IVF, But the House version did not, meaning access to IVF would be vulnerable to restrictions if it were enacted. That's right. They think a frozen bomb pop of an individual is a living, breathing human being. Can I get you guys are all in the pocket of a power companies, but are you saying that if a power company, through to their mismanagement, the power went out to an area and the fridge where these humans were being stored was shut down and they all died? Are you saying that you would charge the power company? Oh, or would you go back and you charge the facility because they didn't have a backup generator? Ah, I see.
We have to protect these innocent power companies.
Many of the 120 House Republicans who are, 120, this is an anti-in vitro fertilization bill. Many of the 120 House Republican co-sponsors of the Life at Conception Act. This is not a fringe part of their caucus. Over half of their body in the House is endorsing making in vitro fertilization illegal. They have been reticent to discuss their thoughts on IVF since the Alabama ruling and the national outrage that followed. The National Republican Senatorial Committee urged members last month to clearly state their support for IVF and publicly oppose any efforts to restrict access, said Senator Katie Britt. Said the same in her response to President Joe Biden's State of the Union address. Sorry. Were you going for kind of sultry breathy, but it came out more asthma breathy? I'm just going to let you know, all right? For conservative politicians and particularly evangelicals, IVF is still a controversial procedure. How dare you want to have a baby? What? Oh, yeah. Also on Thursday, four members of the Hard Right Freedom Caucus, led by Representative Matt Rossendale, Republican from Montana, sent a letter opposing the new Biden administration policy that would expand IVF access for unmarried veterans and veterans of same-sex marriages. You can't have a baby because the frozen embryo bomb pop is a human breathing, living human being. That is what they're saying. If you are, okay, I know there's a lot of in vitro fertilization people that are listening in the Chicago metro area, Minneapolis, St. Paul, who vote Republican. What are you doing at this point? Seriously, what are you doing? I've got friends that have gone through this procedure. And some, it worked right away. Some, it took years. And I can't even comprehend. Luckily, and I am lucky, the people I have known that have gotten in vitro fertilization, every one of them eventually got pregnant, which is great, including one of my best friends who's now got twins and they're in their teens, and it's wonderful. If you are a person who started, say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago with this process, and you're still not pregnant, you're still working on it, and you're watching this, how are you voting Republican again? How are you? The people who are saying that, no, you don't have a right to have a baby. One of these days, someone's going to figure out a way to sue Republican states for, you know, basically, since you forced me to have this kid, that the state is somehow on par with it. And there's going to be eventually at some point, if every Democrat keeps showing up for elections and we get a Democratic leaning Supreme Court, the Supreme Court eventually will say, yeah, you know what? If you tell people they can't have an abortion, then you're on the hook for helping them pay for everything. Then every Republican who sits there and says, I'm pro-life, will be scrambling down to their Capitol saying, how dare the taxpayer dollars get violated like this by feeding people and making sure they have a shelter? How dare you? How dare you? Won't you think about those itty-bitty cents? Those itty-bitty cents. Who's going to think about them? You think I'm lying? Can you imagine if there was ever that ruling? How fast every Republican legislature in the country would pass a law to make it legal to get abortion across the board. If all of a sudden they were on the hook to make sure they had to pay for all the babies they made sure were being born. I mean, what was it in Texas? In Texas, it was something like 50,000 babies from rape alone. Someday someone's going to figure out a way to get this, and it's going to go to the Supreme Court, hopefully with a Democratic majority. And when that does happen, all these Republican states who sit there and say, I'm pro-life, will suddenly say, I'm pro-saving taxpayer dollars. They'll all change. You better get a neck brace, because that's going to be a real sharp 180. Here's the letter reads from the four clown cars that are against the expansion of babies being born. The surplus of embryos. Well, he's from Montana, so it's going to be more Yosemite Sam. You know, now rooting and tooting here, a surplus of embryos will be created, which is likely to result in abandoned or cruelty discarded human life. The letter says, human life, once again, a frozen bomb pop of an egg in a freezer. Living, breathing human, in their mind. These surprising attacks on in vitro fertilization run counter some House Republican efforts. This week, House Speaker Mike Johnson said he supports access to in vitro fertilization, but that he does not believe Congress needs to play a role in protecting it. You might want to go talk to the 120 people that just put that bill forward. Last week, Representative Anna Paulina Luna, a Republican from Florida, introduced the first Republican-sponsored House bill to protect in vitro fertilization since the Alabama ruling. Luna is a member of the Republican Study Committee. The Right to Try IVF Act, which she introduced last week as House Resolution 7669, would cut off federal funding to any states that prohibit a licensed physician from performing IVF for an individual experiencing medical hardship in conceiving a child. If a state were to ban IVF treatments, the Right to Try IVF Act would make the state ineligible for funds that come from the state Maternal and Child Health Services Block Grant Program. The program, also known as Title V, is one of the largest federal grant programs that states can apply to for funding over health service needs for patients, infants, and children. It basically sent over $2.6 billion to states across the country in 2022. Currently, only one Republican, Representative Brandon Williams, is the co-sponsor of Luna's bill. I want to make sure you understand the numbers here. 120 Republicans are saying you can't have in vitro fertilization because every one of those frozen bomb pops is a living, breathing human being. And two Republicans have said, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this. Now, the good news is, considering how messed up the House Republicans are, two could pretty much put it over the top if all the Democrats get on board with that. But yeah, I'm the Democrats. I'm not helping. I'm not. They're drowning in their own pit of sweat right now. I would not throw them a rope. So yeah, that's in the budget bill, you know, budget stuff. like I said, nothing funnier than a Republican who screams, "Wait a second here! Why are you putting policy in a budget bill?" All you have to do is go to the Bomb Pop Act of 2024 and say, yeah, okay, you know, psych. Also, I should mention here, let's look at the actual budget stuff of this bill. The Republican Study Committee released the proposed 2025 budget, which would take an axe to major elements of social safety net, healthcare system, and civil rights while affecting nearly every American, either now or in their future, calling it the Fiscal Sanity to Save America Act. The budget proposal from the far-right mega-affiliated group of about 170 House Republican howler monkeys would effectively create a national abortion ban on in vitro fertilization, creating legal protections for human embryos starting at the moment of fertilization, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. And by the way, it mentions in its budget bill abortion 77 times. The bill was blasted by the Republican Study Committee. Wow, today a group comprising 80% of Republicans in Congress explicitly endorsed a far-right bill that would impose national abortion ban. Just now, 80% of Republican Congress called out for raising retirement age and trying Social Security to life expectancy. The new budget also calls for converting Medicare to premium support model, echoing the proposal that former Speaker Paul Ryan had rallied support for Under the new RCSC plan, traditional Medicare would compete with private plans, and beneficiaries would be given subsidies to shop for the policies of their choice. The size of the subsidies would be pegged to the average premium or second lowest price in a particular market, the budget said. So all this is going to cost you is raising the retirement age of Social Security, tying Social Security to life expectancy. So basically, so say the life expectancy is 82, but you live to 90. Guess what? Those last 10 years, I hope you know how to camp. You know, do you like campfires? Oh, they warm the soul, because the Republicans have none. They basically, so they want you to work till you die, and you're not going to get any Medicare. This is their budget plan. The award-winning journalist Lori Garrett observes the Republican Study Committee's budget cuts $1.5 trillion from Social Security, raises Medicare costs, and cuts caps on pharma fees. So basically, you have to pay more for drugs. Cuts Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, and Children's Health Insurance Program by $4.5 trillion over 10 years, creates $5.5 trillion in tax cuts for the rich and corporations. That's still in there. Oh, don't worry about that. Tax cuts, $5.5 trillion for the richest people in the biggest corporations, eliminates all clean energy tax incentives, and raises Social Security retirement age to 69. Hello. U.S. Representative James Schakowsky, the Democrat from Illinois. Social Security is not an entitlement. Americans pay into the program with each and every paycheck. Raising the Social Security retirement age is yet another way to extremists in the GOP trying to take away your hard-earned money. And that's all they're doing. They're trying to get that ball of money and put it into their pockets of the wealthy people. The MAGA GOP's three-point plan, raise the retirement age, cut Social Security, line the pockets of billionaires. Democrats are going to stop them. I want to remind everyone, and if any Republican ever tells you, well, we got a budget deficit, say, yeah, you caused this with the Trump-era tax cuts. And all you have to do is undo them. And that will actually pick up the deficit dramatically. And they'll look at you like, well, we can't do that. But you can. And you see, this is the great trick. They have convinced all of us they can't touch that. They could just undo the Trump-era tax cuts and budget problem averted. But yeah, they're not gonna, hey, no, we gotta give up everything. Vote, for God's sakes. We'll take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Nice to have you with us today, 952-946-6205. So how about another poll we can just kind of throw by the wayside? Because it just – okay, so this is a Grinnell College national poll. Now, I'm not even going to get into what they say about the presidential race, because I can tell you from the first thing that they talk about, you skewed into a really weird group of people. And my guess is a group of people that is clearly far right. Because when I say what the outcome of their first question of this poll is, you're going to be like, yeah, what again? The latest Grinnell College national poll finds broad support for protecting children from the potential harms of social media, but no consensus on the best way to protect them from mass shootings at schools. A poll of 1,005 U.S. adults conducted by Seltzer and Company. I love their water. In March, found that 55% of Americans favor banning children under 16 from using social media platforms, with the proportion rising to 65% among those with children under 18 years old at home. How about that? This has got to be leading to the right. More than half favor allowing parents to use social media platforms or content that to sue social media platforms for content that harm their children. 57% favor banning students' smartphones in schools. Now, many schools do have a pretty strict policy about that. I know some schools have a harder time in enforcing it than others, but yeah. This is if okay, just that alone tells me your survey group was How many diners in small towns did you go to get this group? If those kids are watching the tickety talk, oh, I tell you what. Oh, there's on there. There's women's breasts on there. My God, man. Yeah, that cat's out of the bag. Welcome to the internet. I don't know if you. What are we talking about? They already are all over this action. You know, when you go to a website and it's like, you're not going to believe what Linda Carter looks like today. You know, it shows a kind of a, you know, a cleavagey shot of Linda Carter, Wonder Woman from the 1970s. You know who that's geared for. Grandpa over in the corner going, that's what that's geared for. All right. So Carla Erickson, professor of sociology at Grinnell College, says the so-called tech lash against the power of social media platforms has been a topic of conversation among sociologists, but researchers have seen few people willing to change their individual behaviors. It's striking that there is a majority of support for all three of these proposals, and it helps to explain why legislation to ban TikTok passed by the House of Representatives is so easy. Bipartisan support for suing tech companies for harm to kids is especially notable, given that Democrats and Republicans usually feel different about corporate responsibility. Well, okay, corporate responsibility. How about the responsibility of being a parent? Because you know what I did is when the whole pandemic came down and it was pretty clear that my kids were going to be sitting in the house and staring at screens, is we went out into the parks and I went hiking and I told the kids to put the damn phones away for a little bit. And we went out and explored and we had some fun. One of the things I get upset about as a parent is stuff like this, where there's the feeling of the parents want to wash their hands of the responsibility of being a parent. You see this often when they say, we should be teaching the Bible in school. Dude, you want the Bible, for goodness sakes. Pretty much every church in America is open at least 3 or 4 days a week. There, many churches have constant programs where you can go for all day on Sunday, all day on Saturday if you want. They have events every weeknight. They have daycares. They have exercise classes. You want God in your kid's life? Well, then man up, woman up, parent up, and go and take your kid to the church. Do not expect the public school system to do that for you, because you're too damn lazy on a Sunday morning to get out of your bed or stop watching NFL football and take your kid to church. That's on you. And that's kind of like this. You're having a trouble with your kid on social media. Well, unless your kid's paying the social media, my God, do you know how many tools and tactics I got on my phone that if I wanted to shut down my kid's internet access, I could do it in a heartbeat? This is just, be a parent, for goodness sakes. This is why it leads me to believe, and by the way, most parents do know this. This is why I believe this is, you know, the blue hair special. That we went out to, we're at the nursing home taking an inventory. When are we going to have Harold Lloyd Day? Yeah, okay. There's like one person that just got that show. Patrick's even looking at me like, who the hell's Harold Lloyd, man? Never mind. Silent film actor. Okay, off you go. All right. It's especially surprising that more than half Americans support banning smartphones from school, a measure that would inconvenience many parents on a daily basis. What isn't surprising is those measures are much less favored by Americans under 35 whom grew up with smartphones. By contrast, the poll found no consensus on policies aimed at reducing the number of students killed in school shootings. So make sure we understand this. The school shootings for these people are not the problem. Someone posting about the school shooting on TikTok, that's the problem. This poll is so damn screwed up, it's hard to even comprehend. Because the second I said that, y'all are like, yeah, that's pretty stupid. Exactly. Yeah, the school shootings, what are we going to do about that? But someone's talking about how scared they are about being shot at school on Instagram. We got to shut that down. Respondents were asked if any of five proposed policies would be effective at reducing a number of students killed in schools, hiring armed guards, arming teachers, raising the age to purchase firearms to 21, banning assault rifles, or criminally charging parents of school shooters for negligence. None of the policies was rated as a majority of respondents as likely to be very effective. What? Oh, I guarantee you if you put those five policies into place, they'd be pretty damn effective. As a society, we can't reach agreement on what we should do to keep our kids safe from mass shootings in school. Democrats are skeptical that arming school staff will protect kids. Well, that's not because we're skeptical. It's because we've had multiple school shootings with armed guards at the schools, and it didn't do a damn thing to stop them. It didn't do a damn thing to stop them. Because you know why? When someone has intent and they've got a weapon that can fire off 20 rounds in 5 seconds, you with your six shooter, you're outgunned. And that's just the reality. And no, we shouldn't be putting up battle turrets in every elementary school in the country. That is, so just ignore the rest of the poll. The fact that that's how that came out tells you the rest of the poll is just pure garbage as well, too. Because that makes no damn sense. Chicago, have a good one. We'll talk to you on a Friday. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show here on a Thursday. Good to have you with us today, Matt and Patrick. Once again, guest-free for the rest of this hour. But I will say we are also at some point today, on this show today, I got a pair of tickets to Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour with special guests John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, Frangela, and I might know something else. I'm not saying anything. Pantages Theater, Saturday, April 13th is when this is happening. It is going to be a hoot. You can get yourself a pair of tickets. Just listen for the chance to call in. Not now. Do not harass Patrick. But we'll give you a time to call in. And at that point, call in. Get yourself a pair of tickets. Stephanie Miller, Sexy Liberal, Save the World comedy tour. And she's joining us on the show tomorrow, by the way. She is joining us on the show to begin the show tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. We are looking forward to chatting with her. Haven't chatted with the delightful Miss M in a while. So it's always going to be – I just love her. I love her. She's fantastic. And Fugelsang, my man crush. Yay! I've never met Hal Sparks. He makes me laugh pretty much. And Frangela's fantastic. I've met them before. Fantastic. Yeah, looking forward to this. So listen for your chance to call in and win tickets. So, Patrick, we need to talk weather here really quick. Because this morning I woke up and people were saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have an inch of snow by the end of the day today. We haven't had any snow today. We had a few flakes falling, but nothing major. Nothing anything outside of just, you know, what you'd call a flurry.
Yeah, I think the snow is supposed to be an overnight event. That's what I've seen this entire time. I hadn't even seen anything suggesting that, you know, your evening commute might be a pain in the butt to get home. It sounds like it's going to be mostly an overnight event.
One inch in the next 6 hours, 2 total inches in the next 12, and that's it. And this one's a quick one. The one this weekend is the one. I'm looking at the Weather Channel app here, all right, and I'm going to... So here is the magical time. Okay, so it starts Sunday. And by the way, this has changed so freaking dramatically every time I've looked at it. Because at one point earlier today, they were pegging us for 24 inches of snow in the metro. And I'm like, really? Snow accumulating during the day on Sunday, 3 to 5 inches. Sunday night is going to be 5 to 8 inches of snow in the metro. My guess is going to be a lot of schools are going to be remote learning on Monday. I think that's a safe bet, right?
Yeah, I think so. The North Shore I saw was going to get absolutely slammed. Oh. I think we're talking probably nearly 2 feet in some places.
Well, they're still hibernating up there, aren't they? Sorry. They're down in their dens. They're sleeping. You know, they're dreaming of blueberries ripening. They're fine. They're fine up on the North Shore. We'll get to them eventually. Monday, here's the thing which is crazy. The high on Monday is 38. Now, I'm no science whiz, but that's warmer than freezing, not by 1 or 2 degrees either. They're still saying we're going to get 3 to 5 inches of snow on Monday at 38 degrees. Well, if it falls before 9 or 10, maybe. But, yeah, then they're saying accumulations of less than an inch on Monday night. Tuesday, an inch of snow. Wednesday, it ends on Tuesday night. But I'm just going to give you a heads up. Sunday night and into Monday is going to be a freaking nightmare. We desperately need this. And as a matter of fact, I posted on social media, Sven's Bring Me the News weather forecast, and he did make the point. The amount of water that we potentially could get would actually make up for the amount of water we're behind. So this is not the worst thing. But still, it is, yeah, it's going to be the real deal. So I just going to make my advice, get your stuff done early. It's Palm Sunday for the Christian faith, so I'll try to go to church in the morning, and then I think I've got a good Waisaki puzzle I'll crack open. Well, I got 15 basketball games going on behind me at this point. Maybe I'll listen to the Twins get absolutely throttled again in a spring training game. That's always just a delight. Ah, sports in Minnesota. There's no regrets at all. Hey, two other quick stories here. I got to give. Biden is on. I'll tell you what. I think it's somewhat stupid that Comer and Jordan want to invite him to testify at the House, which they're asking him to do so. They're not demanding. They're not subpoenaing him. They don't have a crime. They couldn't. They want to ask him, though. He's not going to go. You would be a fool to have this guy come in right now because he is focused and he's in campaign mode. During a speech at a fundraiser in Dallas, President Joe Biden took a shot at Trump's legal headaches, specifically the difficulty he's having obtaining a bond to allow him to appeal to seven civil judgment amounting to $454 million. Trump must pay the full bond amount to delay collection while he appeals the $355 million judgment against him after a judge determined he participated in business and tax fraud by overvaluing his assets to receive more favorable bank loans. After interest, the amount for the damages has already risen to $464 million. Trump's legal team this week said raising the bond amount will be practically impossible after several companies refused to underwrite the bond amount, which, by the way, some of those companies are very conservative, pro-Republican, pro-Trump companies, and they don't want anything to do with this. During his speech, Biden jokingly said that Trump had reached out to him just the other day. This defeated-looking man came up to me and said, "Mr. President, I need your help. I'm in crushing debt. I'm completely wiped out," Biden said, adding, then he responded, "Donald, I'm sorry, I can't help you." Damn! Oh. Bravo. Bravo. The audience broke into laughter, according to reports. Biden also took a few shots at Texas GOP Senator Ted Cruz, saying that if Cruz loses his state Senate election, he joins another loser, Donald Trump. As Biden points out, Biden also cracked jokes about his own age, which has become a contentious issue through the 2024 race. "I'm 41, he said, comparing himself to Trump, adding, "It's about the age of our ideals." Biden blamed Trump for the current migrant crisis on the U.S.-Mexico border, saying Trump didn't just bring chaos to America, he brought chaos to the American border. According to Newsweek, Biden raised over $2.5 million for his reelection campaign on Wednesday alone. He is, if you look at the fundraising numbers, it's not even close. He is absolutely pantsing Trump right now in fundraising numbers. And I don't know, I mean, how much of this money is being diverted to his legal costs? Because there comes a point, I was reading an interesting thing about Trump, that he could basically make a lot of New York, I'm not going to say go away, but be a lot less harsh. All he has to do is declare bankruptcy. That's all he has to do. And it's not unusual for a guy in his situation to do such a thing because, frankly, once again, he's got a lot of property. I think he's considering the way that every company is shying away from giving him this bond, even though he keeps trying to put this property up. That property has got to be leveraged to the tilt. I got to imagine he doesn't have a lot of liquidity in those buildings. But, you know, and so if you have a building that's worth, say, $400 million, but there's $375 million worth of loans already on the building, all you've got is $25 million. And that's that there. You know, and my guess is going to be is Trump is keeps trying to sell this as a, "Well, forget about the loans. It's a $400 million building, so it's $400 million. Well, you got $375 million for loan. But you have to ignore that. That doesn't matter. Yes, it does. And no one wants to play along with him. He could just declare bankruptcy. It would make a lot of things go away, well, at least temporarily. I mean, it would put his estate would go into basically a collection mode, and kind of like Bernie Madoff, you would do your best to basically pull out as much money as possible. The problem, the reason why I don't think he's doing it is because then everything he owns goes up for grabs. And once again, Mar-a-Lago is an interesting case. Mar-a-Lago is in Florida, but the LLC that owns Mar-a-Lago is based in New York City. So he doesn't want Mar-a-Lago to go away. And, yeah, if he declared bankruptcy, he can't pick and choose where what he gets to keep. You know, they could say, you know what? No, you got a nice big apartment complex here, apartment building in New York. You can keep that. That's where you'll live. And he doesn't want people telling him that. Needless to say, every time he appeals one of these things, that's more money he owes a lawyer. And for a guy that basically doesn't have enough money as it is, maybe it's time for him to take the L's. But needless to say, I'm going to laugh and laugh and laugh because he can't get money right now. And this is only going to get worse. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One more story for you today. I have told you people, if you want criminals, hey, idiots, over here, pay attention. It's Matt. Criminals, if you're going to try to perpetrate a crime, don't do it in Edina. They're going to catch you, all right? They will. They've got cameras everywhere. They know exactly who you are, where you're going. You don't have much of a chance. Shots were fired Wednesday evening inside an LA Fitness gym in Edina. Before the suspects fled the scenes, police say no victims or arrests were reported. Initial information indicated a disturbance early in the evening at the facility on West 76th Street, just west of France Avenue. According to police, the suspects at first left the gym and then returned, leading to a confrontation when a gun was displayed and shots were fired. The suspects ran out of the gym and left the vehicle, according to police. I'm trying to think about where this is at. It's got to be somewhere around the quarry area.
Yeah, this would be just north of 494 in Bloomington.
So where Fuddruckers used to be down there.
Yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Miss Fuddruckers. Man, that was a good place. All right. So it's down there. Police are working to process the scene and review security footage. The incident remained under investigation. The Star Tribune's theater critic, Rowan Preston, said he was in the gym's racquetball court. Really? Racquetball? What, did you take a DeLorean there? Around 7:50 p.m. when he heard the shooting, he said he looked up to see a group of people running from the basketball courts towards the front door before hearing the first shot. A few seconds later, a second shot was fired. At that point, we were all ducking, running, trying to figure out how to get out. Police responded by 8 p.m. but did not find any victims or suspects at the gym, according to the Edina Police, formerly known as Twitter. Preston said he saw no evidence of injuries on the scene. So it might have been to scare people, but I guarantee you they've got video footage. I guarantee they got video footage out there. I can tell you they know your make a car, the model of car. They probably know where you live. There's probably, you know, circling Edina helicopters getting ready to lift you out of your house and take you to the jail in Edina. Good luck with all that. No, you just – it's Matt's – you know, first of all, you shouldn't be committing crimes anyway. I mean, think about what you're doing with your life, all right? That being said, if you are going to be stupid enough to try this, you're dumb enough to try this in Edina, enjoy prison. That's all I can say. Enjoy the jail time that you are going to get. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, let's take a break a little early here. We'll come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I first want to reiterate the Dina Winter article. I think it's a Dina Winter article that they did from The Reformer about O'Hara's comments to Harper's Magazine. Because it is stunning to me that this just has gotten skipped past. Because what O'Hara, whether intentional or not, has given us is a fairly stunning look at the culture of the Minneapolis police that he inherited when he came in. Or as I like to call it, the Bob Kroll era, because Bob Kroll was there. And I cannot... I am still to this day stunned that Bob Kroll at least alleged that he and Paul Gazelka were trying to get the White House to usurp Governor Walz, install Gazelka as the governor pro tem, I guess, and make Bob Kroll the commandant or whatever of Minneapolis. I mean, that's kind of that's the interpretation I got from that letter that he released, which Gazelka couldn't get away from fast enough. But then it was proven that Gazelka was trying to call the White House. There was coverage from that night of the trouble in Minneapolis, and Gazelka was, you know, there he was telling the TV channels that he'd been trying to get in touch with the White House. And so, yeah, there's a lot of speculation about what the heck was going on. But can you imagine what would have happened to the city of Minneapolis if that would have happened? I can't comprehend what the body count would have been. I'm going to guess somewhere in the hundreds, and I'm not joking. A hundred people or so killed by Bob Kroll's, you know, policing force. That would be my guess. That would have been my guess. And press conferences talking about, you know, this is how you get control of the city. Having the people live under fear. I can't. That was such a stunning admission of. We're trying to, I mean, it's talk about full-fledged fascism in America, in Minneapolis. Then you hear O'Hara describe what the culture was like when he came on in. And once again, I think O'Hara is doing a pretty darn good job. I didn't think anyone could do as good of a job that he has done. One or two hiccups, sure. But overall, I think O'Hara has done a pretty good job with what he's got. I think a large problem in Minneapolis is West Coast-style police training. It's not like police officers are trained on the East Coast. It's dramatically different. How so? The problem is there's so much focus on training on being tactical and other safety that they're approaching every situation like it's a dangerous encounter. They're not learning how to engage with people, especially people who are different from them, which is the root of the problem. It is a pretty difficult thing to try to change. I've been taking tools away from them. I've been changing their policies, telling them they can't do this, they can't do that. It's difficult to keep shoving it down their throats, particularly when the city is so insanely violent with guns right now. O'Hara talked about his experience getting trained as a Minneapolis peace officer for his peace officer's license. I will never forget some of the stuff I saw when I first went there. There were posters. They were all specific to Minneapolis. These are, once again, these are posters in the training facility about Minneapolis particularly. The images on them were unbelievable. One of them showed a cop being choked while his partner was also being choked at gunpoint. Another said something like, how you train will affect how you perform in combat. Literally, combat was on two of these things. God, just insanity. O'Hara then relayed the harrowing firearms training. I'm used to the New Jersey standard where they just train you to shoot center mass. In Minneapolis, they tell you, okay, next one in the head. Why the hell are we training? I added the hell. Why the hell are we training people to shoot someone in the head? And then the hobble restraint came up. There was this one maneuver that I got rid of when I became chief. It was an issue in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the officer who killed George Floyd. It was a restraint technique called the hobble. It's inhumane. It's hog-tying a human being. I stood there looking as they demonstrated it on one another at the academy. I thought it was a joke. Once again, this isn't one thing that they're just talking about doing. They actually had at the academy people training people how to hog-tie each other like they're animals. O'Hara was baffled by the widespread use of less lethal weapons, sometimes called rubber bullets, which are at the center of the Jaleel Stallings case. Police were out in the marked van there. We've already gone over Jaleel Stallings and that disaster for the Minneapolis police. The Minneapolis police had a whole controversy in 2020, the riots, and then again in 2021 with the 40-millimeter less lethal rounds that they keep shooting. The way their policy was written, any police officer could use a 40-millimeter gun if they perceived any threat of bodily injury, but under that statute, that could be a paper cut. Fascism on display. And I give, once again, I give a lot of credit to O'Hara for calling this out and talking about the culture that he inherited, which was about looking at the people of Minneapolis and saying, oh, you're the enemy. So, yeah. It's stunning where things are at. But yet yesterday, I also brought up the point about the fact that we in this state, we deny, we don't want to talk about what really is going on here, which is we have instantaneous death penalties that can be handed out by police officers. And people don't want to say it like that, but that's the truth. We have determined that a police officer can be judge, jury, and executioner and fire their weapon for a kill shot if they deem it's necessary for anything. They think they have a weapon. They do have a weapon. They have to evict somebody. They have to. There's a warrant out for a minor violation for someone that they pulled over. Anything. That minor violation, that's a death sentence now. And you may not like how I say that, but it's the truth. We have the death penalty in Minnesota. It's just we have done an end around, and as opposed to us approving this as something in society, which we would never done, we had the Republicans basically give the power to the police to where they can execute anyone they want to at any point. And the only justification they have to put forward is, I was scared! I was so, so scared! And that's it. I'm dead serious when I say this. A police officer could kick open the station doors here, come storming down to the studio, look at me, he's like, I don't like what you're doing, pull his gun on me, and as I raise my hands, just say, I thought he was going for a gun. I was scared. That's our Minnesota right now. And because of that, that's why I keep saying I don't think Londrigan is going to go to jail for the shooting of Ricky Cobb. I don't think he's going to, because that's the law basically says. As long as he was scared, he can shoot and he can hand out an instantaneous death sentence to anyone. As long as he was scared. As long as he was scared. The Ramsey County Attorney's Office and Minnesota Attorney General's Office announced Wednesday that no charges will be filed in the St. Paul police officer who killed Yi Zhang last year. Zhang, 65, was fatally shot by Officer Dahir on February 11th. Police responding to the Winslow Commons apartment complex after receiving call that the resident was threatening people with a knife. When officers arrived, they asked Zhang to drop his knife, and as he attempted to enter his apartment, Zhang entered the apartment, which led officers to kick the door open to stop it from closing. Officers ordered Zhang to come out and step back from the door. Zhang then stepped out of the hallway with the knife in hand. At that point, they shot Zhang, and another officer deployed his taser. Yeah, good idea, tasing the dead body. Gee. The Ramsey County Attorney's Office and Minnesota Attorney General's Office concluded that the deadly force used was legal under Minnesota's law. This is what I'm saying. This is why Londrigan's not going to go to jail. As long as they perceive a threat. Now, were they wearing body armor? Probably. Was this a 65-year-old man? Yeah, they were young people that are probably, supposed to be, I'm presuming somewhat physically fit. I mean, that's pretty much the standard nowadays for a police officer. They've gone through combat training. They've gone to hand-to-hand training. I imagine they've learned how to defend themselves, and nope, doesn't matter. They can say, I was scared, bang, done, dead. Instantaneous death penalty. He was holding a knife. He was holding a knife, Matt. That knife could have been a nuclear bomb, and he could have blown it up and wiped out St. Paul. Thank God they shot that guy. Right, Matt? No, he's holding a knife. And that was an instantaneous death penalty in Minnesota. An instantaneous death penalty. The Ramsey County Attorney's Office and Minnesota Attorney General's Office concluded that the deadly force used was legal. The announcement follows the investigation that was conducted by the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and an independent review of use of force by Jeffrey Noble. Noble has reviewed other cases in the Twin Cities where police officers have used deadly force, included in the case of Geronimo Yanez and Derek Chauvin. The BCA presented its findings to the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, which makes the charging decision in the case. Ramsey County Attorney John Choi asked Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison to join the review and added a measure of transparency and the commitment to complete the impartial review of the evidence. I'm not saying that Choi or Ellison were wrong. They weren't. The law is written this way. We have police officers can inflict an instantaneous death penalty as long as they feel they were scared. That's the law. We have the death penalty in Minnesota. It's done via badge. Ricky Cobb, they shot him. Which once again, it's you, that's why it's, you know, when you're sitting there saying, stay with me, pal. What are you doing? You shot him. You administered a death penalty. Stop acting like you're trying to save him. The minute that bullet came out of your gun, there was no, stay with me, buddy. You had made the instantaneous decision that he was going to die. For convenience. And that's the truth. But once again, Londrigan's not going to be convicted because that's the law. That's the law. He won't be convicted. This guy, this officer, he's not going to jail. He's not even going to go to court. Choi said in a statement that he was deeply saddened that the decision to not file criminal charges may cause pain to Zhang's family and community members who wanted a different outcome. Yeah, sorry, sucks to be you. That's basically the case. Anytime deadly force is used by the government, it's a tragedy for all those involved. It requires If it is, then maybe we shouldn't do that. Snowden Herr, founder of the Justice for Yi Zhang campaign, said he was devastated by the decision to not charge the officer. He said waiting for more than a year for the announcement made it even more difficult. Just imagine you're wasting your time and hoping for the best, hoping for justice for Zhang. Herr said Zhang could not hear well and didn't speak English and was unable to understand the officer's commands. But that doesn't matter, does it? Nope. It doesn't matter. He didn't understand the commands the police were giving him. He didn't know what they were saying. He didn't speak English. And he did not hear well. But you see, that's okay. We can still kill him instantaneously, legally. Yesterday I was talking about in Wilmer, where the guy who they tased as they were evicting him, he died. He's not going to, that officer's not going to be found guilty. He had, what, a steak knife or a butter knife in his hand, something of that nature. 75-year-old man, four police officers all wearing body armor, and they were scared to death. So they shot the taser, and he fell, and it killed him. Because the only thing that matters is, hey, the apartment's open. Eviction accomplished. That guy's gone. We do not have any honesty about where we are at. And because of that lack of honesty, we have a world where people feel injustice is going on. Because we just don't want to admit we have given police officers the ability to be judge, jury, and executioner within a split second. And we give them even the out by saying, you know what, as long as you say you were scared, you can kill anyone you want to. That's what needs to be fixed. Because you know what? I'm of the mindset that the first response from a police officer, especially when it's a minority, shouldn't be a bullet to the head. That's just me, though. Someone's being loud in here. I'm scared. Bang! I don't like the way you're looking at me. I'm scared. Bang. It's legal. And you wonder why some people do not trust the police. Fact's a fact. They're not going to go to jail. Londrigan's not going to go to jail. Come on. Moriarty is misguided in charging the files. I think her heart is in the right place, but the reality is the law is not on your side, attorney. It's not, county attorney. It's not, because we have legal executions here in the state of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back. Some other news on the gun front. I'll get to that. And then just a weird story with a personal slant to it. I'll get to that a little bit later on. It is the Matt McNeil Show.
I'm a hog for you, baby. I'll roll around your door.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hey, guess what? Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Tour is coming to Minneapolis, the Pantages Theater, Saturday, April 13th. It's Steph, it's Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, Frangela, and you could be going to it too. A pair of tickets right now. Caller number five. Caller number five, you're going to get a pair of tickets to Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour on Saturday, April 13th at the Pantages Theater. A pair of tickets to caller number five. Good luck. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Good luck there. I want to get to as well, since we brought up the story of the shootings and stuff. Obviously, there's the very tragic shooting that happened in Burnsville. And now we actually have people who are trying their hardest to get this straw purchaser issue settled. The DFL lawmakers are proposing a bill that would increase the penalty for illegal straw purchases and ban certain rapid-fire triggers on firearms. Two gun measures in response to a man fatally shooting and killing two Burnsville police officers and a paramedic last month. The DFL's push follows a House Republican effort to make straw buying a felony last week. Though it was shot down on the House floor, Democrats said the bill first needed a hearing and to go through the conventional legislative process. Representative Kayla Berg, one of my favorites. I love her. She's fantastic. DFLer out of Burnsville is the chief author of the bill that would increase the penalty for buying a gun and knowingly transferring it to someone who is prohibited from having one, known as a straw purchase. The bill would be upgraded to the charge from a gross misdemeanor to a felony, which comes with a maximum sentence of 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. I do not think that's nearly enough. I think it needs to be a five-year prison term, at least. At least. I would say 20 even, but that's just me. The bill also bans binary triggers, which fire one round when the trigger is pulled and one round when it's released, allowing shots to be fired quicker. The bill is scheduled to receive its first hearing today. On February 18th, a man used two AR-15-style firearms to kill three Burnsville first responders. A federal grand jury indicted the man's girlfriend for making straw purchases of five firearms, one of which had a binary trigger on the man's behalf, which he later used to fatally shoot the first responders. The feds last week stepped in and charged the girlfriend, alleging straw buys. She faces up to 15 years in federal prison if convicted. Straw purchases have become a major focus of federal law enforcement, citing a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives report the Associated Press reported last year that 54% of guns that police recovered in crime scenes in 2021 had been purchased within 3 years, with the quicker turnaround potentially indicating illegal gun trafficking or a straw purchase. So basically, half the guns are likely straw purchase guns. Half the guns on the streets. I want to repeat that number because you wonder, like, why are you focused on the guns? Because half the guns used are not being bought by the individual using them. They're being flooded into the streets. And the Republicans know this, but they don't want to stop it because they want everyone afraid all the time. Berg, who's in a swing district and carrying a gun control bill for the first time this session, said Democrats have been working on increasing penalties for straw purchases prior to the Burnsville shooting and not merely reacting to the tragedy. As a matter of fact, no, they actually passed common sense gun reforms last year. It's really delicate balance between using what happened in my community and presenting a bill about it. We have to be very intentional in our discussions. This bill was already in motion, and while some think it's reactionary, it is not. Berg said DFL lawmakers learned about the law's loopholes from the Burnsville shooting, and she wants to prevent another community from enduring a tragedy. Straw purchases are currently a federal and state crime, but critics say Minnesota prosecutors rarely bring charges because of the lenient sentences handed down for gross misdemeanors. See? Okay, and I want to make sure we understand something. That this is by design. This whole thing, this is conservative gun policy on design. Okay? By making it to where the county can't, a local jurisdiction cannot bring charges against somebody, the federal government doesn't have the time or the manpower to prosecute, or the state for that matter, to prosecute every gun crime across the state. This is by not having harsher penalties on these lower levels, you are basically gutting the ability for this to ever be enforced. This is why you have to be there. Now, I will say this. considering those stories that we saw earlier of the mistreatment of workers in rural Minnesota by their employers and the reluctance of those county attorneys to bring charges, I don't know. I mean, if all of a sudden one of the wealthier people in town's kid is found to have been buying guns and taking them into the city and selling them on the streets, and you have that person dead to rights, it still depends on the county attorney for bringing the charges. And I, you know, my gut feeling is there's going to be a lot of county attorneys who are not going to charge straw purchase buyers because that's just a guy trying to make a buck here. I mean, just because he sold it to somebody on the street doesn't mean he knew it was going to be used for crime. These, of course, are the same exact people who are screaming, of course you need to charge that girlfriend for giving him the guns. How dare you? Exactly. So, no, this is one of those cases where you wonder how they gut this bill. The problem we have when they keep saying is like, we got laws on the books. Yeah, but there aren't nearly enough prosecutors or manpower on the state or federal level to prosecute every gun crime. This now basically brings the county attorneys into play, and you're going to get more prosecutions. Particularly, I can't wait for, my guess is going to be that the counties in the metro are going to start catching people trying to sell guns. And all of a sudden, you're going to get these rural county attorneys calling up. I know you guys are wanting to press charges here, but that's Billy Bob's son. Billy Bob's one of my biggest supporters. And I, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll have a harsh talking with him. I'll wag my finger and make sure he doesn't think about it again. You can already see that coming. So once again, this is going to be local prosecutors going to be able to bring charges. Representative Kelly Moeller, the DFL from Shoreview, serves the chair of the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. She told the Minnesota Reformer that elevating the straw charge to a felony newly empowers county prosecutors to charge them. Last year, the DFL lawmakers passed a provision that would have made straw purchase a felony, but it was removed at the last minute. Moeller said it was pulled because the bill did not receive enough hearings. She also said last year's bill included a high bar for prosecution, requiring that prosecutors prove that someone gave a prohibited gun knowingly. That's a difficult standard to prove. And once again, this is even bills that Democrats put out there. Now, it sounds like there was a procedural problem in getting this passed last year when they passed all the other bills. But, you know, still, I'll say whoever wrote that bill, you can't write it to where only 1% of straw purchases will ever get prosecuted. You have to write it to where the difference was that they proved that someone gave a prohibited gun knowingly. That's a difficult standard. And let me go back up here and say what it is. The penalty for buying a gun and knowingly transfer it to someone who's prohibited having one, known as a straw purchase, that would upgrade the charge from a gross misdemeanor to a felony. It basically would, if you had reason to believe the person should not have a gun, then that would be the case. So there you go. So it basically makes it to where it's a lot harder for them to merely say, oh, well, we didn't know. You can't really do that anymore. Berg's bill states a person who makes an illegal straw purchase when they know or reasonably should know that the person they give the gun to is banned from having one. There it is. So it's no longer just you have to knowingly giving a gun to someone who is prohibited having one. Is that if you know or reasonably should have known that the person they gave it to. So that basically you can't say, well, I wasn't fully aware that the person who had gone to prison got a gun. Well, they shouldn't be having a gun if they went to prison. So that's the case. Moeller said that even if a felony straw purchase was in place, they wouldn't have prevented the Burnsville shooting. Here's where it gets somewhat comical. Representative Peggy Scott, Republican from Andover. This is not comical. She's long worked to make straw purchases a felony. She said passing the bill sooner may have acted as a deterrent. I don't think it would have by any means. Had this law been in place at state level even a year ago, would knowing that the penalties were so strong that you could go to prison and be charged locally within the state of Minnesota, would it have prevented the crime? We're not going to know. But it tells you, it makes you ask the question. Scott said the attempt to suspend House rules and bring her bill forward last week was a sincere effort to make the law after reading news coverage of the Burnsville shooting. It was sobering to have me read that, knowing that we could potentially save lives. So once again, she says, we can't say for sure, but we would have saved lives. That's where it can, this is just pandering to the bill at this point. And by the way, her bill doesn't go nearly as far as Berg's bill does. So it's kind of like she was trying desperately to kind of, you know, stave them off the path and try to get a weaker bill put in there, that sort of thing. And by the way, if you are really upset about this, don't you dare look at the Democrats and ask why they haven't gotten more common sense gun bills passed. They did. Your side are the ones. Can we already put this person out? We already see the floor discussion. I don't like dead cops, but if that's a necessity of a fully enforced Second Amendment, well, that's just something we're going to have to take. That's what you're going to hear. That's going to be the argument from the right. So, Peg, I'll tell you what, if it passes unanimously and passes without any Republican speaking up about why we shouldn't do this, I'll concede. But if any Republican steps up there and says, we shouldn't be doing this, the problem's not with the DFL, the problem's with your party. Berg called the recent GOP effort pure theater. She said she heard from some of her constituents who are offended by the GOP move, which they were, because the GOP is not serious about gun control. I'm simply not going to allow what happened in our community to be a narrative for them. There are too many ways that they could have handled it. Berg said the Burnsville community is still reeling from the shooting. She's hoping the constituents will feel heard. We want to do this in the way that honors and happens, but we're absolutely not exploiting it. So, yeah, I think it's a good deal. I think it's overdue. I think you have to really crack down on these straw purchases. And I hope that when it's found someone has been straw purchasing or selling guns illegally, who's, let's just say on theory, a wealthy Republican guy in the rural parts of the state, and the county attorney refuses to charge the felony there, I kind of hope Keith Ellison's office picks up the slack. By the way, Patrick, really quick here, we do have a winner here for our Stephanie Miller tickets, right?
Yep, Matt in Minneapolis, congratulations. You're going to see the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour in April.
Congratulations, Matt. Guess what, folks? Not only do I have Stephanie Miller on the show with me tomorrow, I got another pair of tickets to give away tomorrow as well. So listen in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow for your chance to win tickets to go see Stephanie Miller. That is on April 13th with the Sexy Liberal Tour coming to town. Let's take a break, come back. We'll wrap up the show in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So I'm going to bring up a name that's been recognizable in town, longtime radio personality, but yeah. And I'm bringing this up because, for goodness sakes, drugs are horrible. Drugs are freaking horrible. Jeff Dubay, former longtime sports personality in the Twin Cities, is due in court this next week, stemming from the latest of his many drug-related run-ins with the law. He left jail on Wednesday after he was charged in Todd County District Court with felony third-degree possession of a narcotic and driving under the influence of drugs after a state trooper pulled him over in West Union early this month. Charges say he was wearing only a blanket and he was soaked in vegetable oil. Okay. He now lives in Grand Forks, posted bond, and is due back in court on Monday. His attorneys declined to comment about the allegations. According to the charges, on the evening of March 8th, a state trooper saw an SUV traveling erratically before stopping at the West Union Catholic Church parking lot. The SUV then left the parking lot, prompting the trooper to pull the driver over. Dubay explained he was heading to Fargo to get off the freeway in order to get to the Minnesota Gopher hockey game on his cell phone. Beneath the blanket, he was naked. He said he'd been sleeping at a rest stop near Avon earlier. The trooper saw that Dubay was restless, speaking rapidly and sweaty. He explained that he stopped taking his medications. He acknowledged using meth about a week earlier. Dubay got out of his SUV to perform a sobriety testing. It was covered in vegetable oil that came from a bottle he had with him. Apparently, drug smugglers have been known to use various cooking oils to conceal meth as it shipped. Dubay failed numerous aspects of sobriety testing. His law enforcement search of his vehicle turned up meth. and two small bottles of adhesive remover. It was suspected that Dubé may have been huffing from those bottles. The charges read while in jail, Dubé acknowledged using meth that morning. He's had a lot of problems. Back when I first came back to the cities after I worked in Ames, Des Moines, one of the part-time gigs I got was filling in on the sports station. And I got to meet some – I got to meet – you know, Mike Morris was one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Just really nice. Who's their Packers guy that they got over there?
Dave Sinekin.
Sinekin was just a sweetheart of a fella. Just really fun guys to work with. I worked with one other guy over there who's not Dubé, but was the biggest jackass I've ever met in this industry, hands down, not a joke. But I did some fill-in stuff over there, and most of those guys were great. I was doing some morning stuff for them, so I got to meet at that point both Paul Allen and Jeff Dubé. Paul Allen was one of the nicest, it could be the nicest human being I've ever met in this industry. Sincere, hardworking, ungodly talented. Holy God, has that guy got more talent than I'll ever dream of having. He sat with me and talked with me, just gave me just was wonderful to chat with him. And I can't tell you, truthfully, down deep in my soul, I am very happy that guy is doing the play-by-play for the Vikes. That guy deserves all the credit he can get. He was just, and he's a rarity. He's just a genuinely nice person. That morning, I walked up to Jeff Dubé and I said, Jeff, nice to meet you. Matt McNally says, why would I ever shake the hand of a part-time fill-in guy? And he walked right past me. I thought he was just kind of a jerk, and now I realized back then that he was having drug problems. And they are not getting any better. I don't know why we've had so many cases of people that are adults that are having trouble with drugs, but for God's sakes, it will destroy you. It will destroy everything about you. It will destroy your family. It will destroy you. I hope he finally gets the help he needs. I hope maybe we're close to rock bottom. I don't know. But it's just heartbreaking to see once again another story of how drugs just basically derail people's lives. That's hard. That is hard. Native Roots Radio is coming up next. Have a wonderful day. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.